Hi, I'm John Brown, and today we're celebrating the music of brand new Ryan Coogler movie, Sinners.
We've been gone a long time. We back now.
You twins?
Nah, we cousins.
There are legends of people with the gift of making music so true. It can conjure spirits from the past and the future. This gift can bring fame and fortune.
Will somebody take me?
With music being such an integral part of the film's soundscape and story, Sean Wilson and I caught up with Oscar-winning composer and the film's producer, Ludvig Göransson, to find out more. This is an incredible film. Very, very, very cool. But I think we'll, if you're ready, we'll get right into it and jump straight in. Sean, first question's all yours, sir.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about. And as a sort of broad strokes question would be, the film amalgamates sort of Jim Crow era, Deep South drama, vampire movie, social study, character study. And there's so much going on. Like, how did this influence your instrumental choices in terms of the score?
Well, I've been friends with Ryan for 15 years now. We've been working together for 15 years. And he kept saying the whole time when he was writing this movie, he's like, it's how funny it is that he's writing a movie about a guitar player and I'm a guitar player. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the first things that I did before we started shooting the film was to actually buy the guitar that we're using in the film, you know, a 1932's Dobro resonator guitar. And that became the guitar that I wrote the whole score on too. It's a beautiful instrument, and the same guitar that he's playing in the film, I brought it back into the studio with me, and I wrote all the music on that instrument.
The one with the silver plate. It had the silver plate.
Yeah, the silver plate, the resonator. You know, that was they had a resonator on the guitars back then because they didn't have amplifiers. So that was the resonator, was to make the sound louder from the guitar.
Let's elaborate on that, actually, because one of the questions I did want to ask you was about how music is such a huge part of this film. And what kind of conversations were you having with Ryan very on, you know, in this process, very early in this process, about the part that music does play in the film and how you guys wanted to really approach that and ultimately how you came to the sound of the film, essentially?
Well, when Ryan was writing the movie, he kept sending me music from the 30s, from the 20s. And something I think that's very interesting is that when you hear those old recordings from the 30s, they sound terrible. You know, the way they were recorded, the sound, when you listen to it now, people today think that music sounded like that back then. You know, that the record, you know, it's like only old men singing, you know, had a terrible hiss, and it's a little pitched up. It's almost like you're watching, you look at your grandfather's or grandmother's photos and it's black and white, and you thought everything was black and white.
Back then.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, how can we take this music and portray it in a way, you know, put the audience in an experience how the music was experienced and how it could have sounded back then. You know, this music back then in the 30s was performed by kids, by 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, and it was dangerous. It was edgy. And it was the devil's music. And so the first thing we needed to do was to find the right artists, the right writers, music to write the songs with. So Ryan and I went to Memphis on a research trip, where I also invited my dad, because my dad is from Sweden, and he's a blues guitar player. So that's I grew up around blues. You know, my dad in the 60s, even though he lived on the other side of the world, on the other side of the planet Earth, he heard blues on the Swedish radio, and that changed his life. You know, so this music, which is so powerful, is I would say it's America's greatest contribution to culture. You know, it changed everything we're listening to today is from the blues, right? So we, to get a sense of where to start, we went on that blues journey. It's called the blues trail. So you go to Memphis and you drive through the Delta, through the plantations, and there's still juke joints, real world juke joints that exist, and a lot of blues musicians live there in Mississippi. So we found some incredible artists to work with, and also needed to find the right songwriters to write the songs with. So I wrote one of the songs was written by Rafael Sadiq, another one by Brittany Howard from Alabama Shakes. So, you know, and it was, I realized that it was important to get songwriters that also know how to play an instrument, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it started, how we found the original songs for the film. Yeah.
Sean.
There is so much of the music comes out of the world of the film, like diegetically, it's from within the world of the film, because you have musicians in the movie, and you have the incredible one shot. There's the one shot, which I won't give away. It might be a spoiler to describe what it is, but I've got to be careful with that in terms of describing it. But how does that influence your role as a composer? Because you've got music inside of the world of the film, and then you've also got your role outside of the film putting music onto it. Like, how does that change things?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this movie is so unique. I mean, and the movies that has music embedded in the story like this doesn't, you know, it's so rare. So I was involved on this movie on a completely different level than just being a film composer. You know, mm-hmm. I was also part of executive producer on this film. My wife, Serena, was executive music producer on the film. We moved together with our kids to New Orleans, where we shot the movie, so we could be on set for 3 months. We had a studio in New Orleans where the actors, you know, came in every day, practiced. I gave Delroy Lindo piano lessons every day. Like, Jamie came in every day and recorded Pale Pale Moon. Miles came in. We did these arrangements for his original songs in the film. And also everything you see in the movie is also live. So, you know, Miles sitting in the car playing the song for Stack, that's him playing. He learned to play blues guitar He's obviously an incredible singer, but before this movie, he didn't know how to play guitar. So he learned to play guitar, slide guitar. It's not just noodling. It's like he's playing the slide blues guitar, and he learned that in 3 months. And when he's playing for Stack in the car, that's a live performance. And Michael B. Jordan's reaction is a real reaction. And that's why it's so effective, because I feel like that kind of reaction translates on the cinema and to the audience as well.
Yeah. Tell us about the Electric Lady Studios and the role that played in this process.
Electric Lady in New York.
Yes,
that was literally we were bunkered up there the last week, like 2 weeks ago, when the during the New York premiere, because the whole movie was done, and I was working on the soundtrack. So I'm writing some original songs with some established artists for the soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
and Haley called me and she was like, she really wanted to make an original song,
mm-hmm.
for the soundtrack, and so we bunkered up in Electric Lady Studios the last week and we made a song together.
It was amazing, yeah. Sean.
There was I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly. When I sat through the credits and I was looking at the list of instrumental players and the list of instruments, there was an instrument that came up. I think, is it the djembe or djembe? I think that's right. I wondered what that was and what role that played in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, like we talked about that surreal montage, right? There's a song in the movie that is kind of the climax. That's when everything kind of turns on its head. Right, and we have Miles, Preacher Boy Sammy is he's finally has his moment on stage, and he's playing a song, and he enters this state, this form, which is so interesting because musicians, they can really channel a spirit, I think. You know, we've all been to a concert and seeing an artist that we admire, and while, when they start playing music, when they start singing and playing, they become something else, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happens in the film. He starts playing and he reaches a stage where he closes his eyes and he starts connecting with spirits and the future and the past and the present. And you see everything that came out of the blues, but also what came before the blues. And so it's African ancestors, but there's also modern contemporary musicians. So we had, so to be able to make that, we needed all these type of different instruments, like the Ngoni, which is the original banjo. Banjo is an African instrument, you know, and the guitar came from Africa, came from the banjo. And that goes into a djembe player who's an African drummer. And then you see a DJ, you know, playing, and then a 70s funk, blues funk guitar player, you know. So it's, we needed to have a lot of different instruments on set that day.
Sean, one more question for you.
I wondered, would you describe this necessarily as a horror soundtrack, or is it just too multifaceted for that?
I think it's a bit of everything, you know. I think it's the movie's so complex, right? It's you know, sexy, it's scary, it's gory, it's there's action, there's love, there's a bit of everything, I think, in this film. And I think you find that in the music as well. You know, it has big emotions, it has action, there's horror, there's you know, genre wise, I don't know where really to put it in a box. It's very, but it's also for me kind of a very personal journey with the instrument, with the guitar, as the heart.
Mm-hmm. And just finally, I think you've answered this question, to be honest. My final question to you was, what can audiences expect? There's so much hype around this film. So many people very excited to see this film, but what can they expect from a time at the cinema, or seeing this in a cinema or in a movie theater this coming weekend?
I mean, something you never experienced before, you know. I feel like in many ways, and at times plays as a live concert, you know, you have performances that transcends the screen into the audience. You have, you know, your emotional state pulls between, you know, so many different emotions. It's you know, an unexpected, so many unexpected twists and turns. And also the way that we also using modern, you know, it takes place in the 30s, but the way we're using modern technology with, you know, the big format IMAX, and also the sound mix, how we're using, you know, Dolby Atmos or 7.1 and 5.1 to really spin this around on its head and making it feel like an interactive experience. I feel like it's just going to make people feel a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions going to come into play.
More than the film, it's an experience. It's a life experience. Yeah. Livvy, yeah. Thank you so much. Congratulations on the film. It's a brilliant film and a brilliant album. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Good to see you guys.
Thanks, Livvy.